Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Wake up! Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
You got the best offense in baseball, the Cubs,
yep,
going against maybe the best young pitcher.
I don't know that they're going to face many pitchers this year any tougher than Paul Skenes. I'm not quite sure why Dustin doesn't have a modicum of respect for him.
You know, he puts his pants on one leg at a time too, David. Okay? He's a man, not a machine.
He is not the immortal one.
Okay.
Let's go after him a little bit, but let's be aware of making him work.
Here comes the 0-2 by Skenes. Swanson, it's a high fly ball, deep right center field. Cruz giving chase at the track near the wall. He leaps, and this one is gone. Dansby Swanson with a home run the other way to right center field. Now the batter, Kyle Tucker, he drills one deep right center field, way back, still going at the wall. Reynolds looks up, and this one's gone. Tie ball game. Here's the 3-0. And a high fly ball into deep left field. Canario going back. He looks up. This is gone. Saya gives the Cubs the lead.
Skenes really struggling.
You heard it. You see, he's not a machine. He's a man.
Presley fires. Fly ball to right. Pretty well hit. Back goes Tucker near the wall. He's got it. Cubs win the game.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw. 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
He's a man. He's just a man.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Paul Skenes, a mere mortal, a man who was assaulted by a power surge, Mr. David.
Good morning, Mully. Happy Friday. Yeah, the Cubs did what the Cubs do to good pitchers. They hit him all over the ballpark. And he was a mere mortal yesterday. Still, I think, among the best pitchers in baseball. Still on my list of top five gate attractions for pitchers.
Fair.
But the Cubs are the best offense in baseball for a reason. And they've got power up and down that lineup. And that was their day. So, Paul Skenes, eh.
He's no Colin Ray.
He's no Colin Ray.
Let's get it out there.
He wasn't the best pitcher on the mound yesterday.
No, he was
at
not.
At PNC Park. Who thought you'd be able to say that this year?
He's been doing pretty well.
You know what?
He pitched well yesterday. Paul Skenes was battling with his location a bit.
He was.
He was struggling.
Three homers in one inning.
That was
That was pretty awesome.
That is very much what you hope to get out of a Cub lineup that good and that deep. But I think you have in Skeens still he looks like an ace.
Yeah, I mean,
but you take this and you run with it.
He's a great pitcher.
Focus was there.
You beat him.
They grind out at bats.
Yep.
And they have the capability of going deep on occasion. And Seiya Suzuki, with due respect, you know, we have to say this again, keep reiterating it as long as he keeps hitting. The offseason, guys like me, we were critical of him and whether or not they should trade him and how he was going to be as a DH and all those things. He's got the highest, he's got a higher OPS than Kyle Tucker.
Let me tell you something. That guy, not only did he have, you know, two homers and a really big game, that guy showed more emotion in that game than I have seen from him as a Cubs player. He was almost animated. He was so pleased when he hit his home run and then the next one. That guy was jacked up and looked like he was having a blast.
He should be.
Right up to the point where they did the post-game interview. And then it was just, I was kind of like, I don't know what we need here, but we got to somehow tap into the emotion he was showing earlier. That guy was smiling.
From the interview perspective?
Well, I think it was, he was listening carefully to the translation, right, and then he was answering the question. He just was, he was kind of serious, Seiya, once again. And I thought to myself, man, like, you ought to ask him about, hey, man, you really seem pleased. Like, how is, are you feeling, like, just tap into his emotion somehow.
Well, I think the emotional Seiya is what the Cubs see.
Yes.
And I think that's what they enjoy. And
yes,
when you hear people on the team talk about Seiya and talk about his sense of humor,
that's
and how
it.
Much fun he has.
Tap into it.
Well, it's difficult, though, because of kind of what we were talking about yesterday with Luis Robert Jr.
Right.
And players who, you know, there is something that is lost in translation sometimes.
I agree.
And it's unfortunate, but it's true. And I think Seiya Suzuki is a good example of that. He does appear to be having more fun this year.
Oh, my gosh.
He's off to a really great start, so you understand why he's enjoying this.
You know, why not ask him about it? That's all I'm saying. Why not, like, just try to break through a little bit? And I wonder about the translator. I'm not picking on anyone, but is he serious as a heart attack, too? Can you get him to loosen up a little bit?
It's interesting you mentioned that, because you remember a year ago, they change translators for Seiya Suzuki. And I don't know that he enjoyed that as much as you would think.
I'm just saying that like Shota Imanaga has become this like cult figure.
Mm-hmm.
And Seiya's having as good a year as anybody on the team, as you point out. Even Kyle Tucker.
Yeah.
So like he seems like he's really enjoying it. How do you get that out?
Well, I think it's interesting.
I just want more of that.
But I think it doesn't feel like it's his personality to be publicly as effusive as we see sometimes in private moments or in moments that are contained to the dugout or his teammates on the field. The celebrations are fun.
Oh, yeah.
And he's enjoying himself. And I suppose from a Cub fan perspective, you're just glad that he is somebody who appears to be very popular with teammates. And
yes,
then the rest is interesting to follow, but I am curious about how that will evolve as he becomes more successful, more visible, because he's having many more days like yesterday, he's going to be front and center.
This isn't his first rodeo. I mean, he's been here for a bit. We need to have tapped into that a little bit.
Don't think it's going to happen.
I mean, I just think for him, I think he'd have a better time.
Yeah.
And everybody, like, you know what it's like.
But when you say that,
it's like a giant party. Everybody loves the guy.
But when you say that, my mind goes to Jose Abreu, because it felt like he was a guy that always enjoyed himself with teammates. Didn't always translate when he was talking or being interviewed or being interpreted.
That's a fair
assessment. And Jose Abreu was somebody that was affable, respected in that clubhouse as much as anybody. And I don't know, never quite connected with the fan base in a way that most people who are MVPs or have a lot of success do.
Yeah.
So there's always going to be, I think, something a little bit lost in translation or a little bit missing from that tight of a connection with the fan base or the public. But yesterday, that's hearing Craig Counsell talk about Seiya Suzuki's swing,
yes,
and calling it a beautiful thing.
Oh,
and
here, let's take a listen. This is great.
Seiya, just what is it about his swing where he's able to make such hard contact consistently?
He's a strong man. He's got a beautiful swing, and he's a strong man, and that's it.
I love that.
You know, but I love that. But like when he's at the plate and when he's hitting like this, he does look like you look at him like, you know, look how put together that guy is. Like you can't help.
Back up 2 years.
But have exactly. Or
the beginning of last season, was it when he had the oblique strain?
Yeah.
We were like, boy, he looks jacked. Oh, he has more muscles to pull.
Yeah.
And he pulled all of them, it seemed. Yeah. But he does look like he is, his physique, he is strong, he is tight, and now he's making contact. And hearing Craig Counsell say he's a strong man with a beautiful swing.
You know what's
is
funny?
Is a great description.
But like when he says he's a strong man, I think of like a guy at a circus in like a tight, you know what I mean? That's just kind of what goes through my head when I hear the term strong man.
But I think of him taking like the big hammer or the boom. But he's
a beautiful swing.
Making contact.
Yeah, he is.
And he's connecting. And I think the texter 813 brings up an interesting point. We wondered about him being a full-time DH, what that would do to his approach and what he would do between at bats and all those things.
He's better.
He's better.
He's better.
Do you think there's cause effect there? Because I think he wanted to play the field, remember?
Oh, I know. Everyone wants to play the field, but he struggled to play the field. There were those games where he'd have some bizarre, like horrible-looking error, and you just kind of be like, oh, like how do you hide that?
Well, his defensive prowess disappeared the last couple seasons.
But
he came in known as a defensive outfielder, remember?
Oh, I know.
He was a guy with a good glove, and they're paying him all the money because he was a plus defender and a big arm and all those things. And then he had a couple real high-profile misses.
Yes.
And it was hard to get past those images in your head.
But you're right. Like his response to it, his response to being a DH, we've talked to Frank Thomas about this, about the difficulty of going from being an everyday player to a guy who only has to worry about hitting.
It's boring.
You get in your own head and you can really, you know, you can struggle a little bit when you first make that transition. This guy he's hit the ground running. He's been fantastic. He, like I said, he looks like he's having a blast.
Also, kudos to Craig Counsell again because, yes, that was a great description, but don't you remember when last year feel like there was some, not friction, but there was a disconnect between the two. And he prioritized communicating with Seiya Suzuki this year and took it on himself and said, I need to do a better job.
Right.
And it seems like, obviously, it's easier to communicate with somebody when they're smiling all the time.
Yes.
And Seiya Suzuki seems to be enjoying having the highest OPS of any guy in that top of the order. But Seiya Suzuki and Craig Counsell seem to be on the page this year, on the same page this year, and that's making a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, he's really made a huge difference. He's really raised the level of his game, and he's another guy that could be headed to an all-star game.
Yeah, he could. He's having an all-star season.
No question.
And yet he wasn't the hottest hitter in the Cub lineup during the Pirate Series.
No, that's Dansby Swanson.
Dansby Swanson. Yes.
He got a solo homer in the power surge.
He started it.
And then back-to-back jacks. Gosh. They ran the guy out. I mean, how awesome was that? Seriously.
He was definitely more man than machine.
Dustin is sitting there. He is so proud of himself.
He's so proud for calling that shot.
Yeah,
I get it. He has had a good week.
He's doing well for himself.
He was due.
If he could just give us a derby horse.
Oh, boy.
He'd really
it's almost as if you're
going.
Looking at my computer right now.
Are you? You're looking at the Derby.
I am
right
grinding
now.
On.
But
grinding
you've been grinding on that for like a month.
You know, believe it or not, not really.
Okay, not really. You weren't ready for
just
the Derby.
I was a month ago. I started targeting this date to make sure we could talk pucks and ponies with Eddie O at 9 o'clock. That's what I was grinding on first. Making sure the best in the business join this show.
How does one grind on that a month before
making sure that
Friday?
The day I didn't want him on Thursday. Some people had him on Tuesday. I want the current.
Yeah.
There has been a horse
scratch. There's been a scratch.
Yeah. There has been a scratch.
Rodriguez, right?
You know what?
Rodriguez.
Mr. David's prepping over there.
Who's the horse that's coming in? Keep an eye on that horse. Yes.
Diaz.
Is it? What's the name of the? Wait a minute. That horse that's coming in could win the bloody race.
Right? Am I right there?
Baez, I believe.
Baez. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
You see, yes.
I think there's a Cubs connection there.
Me.
Baez, right?
Baez. So, yeah.
I mean, if you're a Cubs fan, you gotta.
I was thinking Ray. Bet. You're thinking Javi.
That's a good Baez. Horse. That's
how horse. Do you not like a horse named Baez? Really? When's Bryant entering the fray?
Is it?
How about Rizzo?
Baeza or something? We'll have to work.
We'll have to ask Eddie O. We booked him a month ago.
Here's the problem. The problem is the best horse in the race is journalism. I don't want to get into this yet.
Well, again, but that's got to be. I saw that horse name, I thought of you two immediately.
I know. And it's like, how do you get off journalism?
Well, let me tell you a story.
Why would you want to? Well, I know. That's very well said. But I understand that the business is going the wrong way. No, I love that horse. He's like, he could be like a generational horse.
Well,
we don't know how good he is.
That's the talk.
He's the best horse in the field, and he's at 3-1. You know,
there you go.
There are 20 horses in the race.
All week.
He's only run with, how many horses were in the last? Five? Didn't they have a bunch of scratches? I don't know. It's just hard.
All week long, I think it's fair to say, the reputation of journalism has seldom been stronger lately.
That's fair.
We'll see. Well, I think Eddie O is going to buy into the favorite.
I think here's the thing. You want to cash. You want to win. If he's the best horse, and he has, I believe he's got the highest buyer speed figure, a 108,
mm-hmm.
and no one else is near that.
Do we know the origin of the name?
Do we know what's behind that?
I need to find that. Yeah. Maybe by 9 o'clock we could find that out.
Well, we could.
I'm very curious.
We can look
very
quickly
curious.
At who is...
I think I want to ask all the questions. I want to ask the 5 W's and an H about how this got to the point where they named it horse journalism.
Yeah, we'll find out. I mean, we'll find out who...
That's a good task.
A lot of times names are based on other names of lineage, etc. Yeah. So we'll look at it.
We'll have to look into that.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Nonetheless, that's tomorrow, today, tonight. We've got Cubs going to
Milwaukee. Do you link it somehow with Publisher just because it's, you know, part of the business?
It seems like that has to be like $1 exact a box, right? You just have to. That's a $1 e-box just in case, because you will kick yourself if that crosses
so
and you didn't get a little bit of your beak wet on that one.
That's good. I'm sorry, David. What were you saying? We got
nothing.
Too caught
I got
up
nothing.
This.
You guys can go ahead and talk Derby here. I'll be back at 9.
It's the only day of the year where
I
got to
go order breakfast. I'm going to get coffee.
Derby.
I'll be back.
Oh, no, I'm going to get coffee today.
I'll go get coffee. You guys can talk Derby.
Mitch is at the OTB right now, I think.
He's in line?
Yeah,
he's sweating it out.
Don't kid yourself. He's playing the slots right now.
He has asked me about 12 times what time Eddie O is coming on today.
Yes. Well, Mitch is an – you know, the thing is, and it's an interesting observation, but if you are making a show pull bet, are you allowed to take the favorite in the race? If it's a show pull, do you have to have a horse that's going to hit the field? You know what I mean? We need whoever is coming in and is going to hit the board at about, I don't know, 7-1 to 10-1.
Why wouldn't you take the favorite if you think the favorite?
Because it'll pay
$2.20. Okay. Don't you want to win?
Of course I want to win, but I want to win money. I want to gamble. I want to have fun. Don't you want to gamble? That's the whole point of
horse
racing.
Gambling is fun. Betting on the horses is fun. But then you guys never take the money. You just want to roll it over and bet on another thing. So I don't know. It's not that much fun.
We're looking for a triple crown winner, buddy.
You guys are like, let's roll. No. Don't take the money. Let's roll it over.
Well, that's what a show pool is.
Okay.
It's for the triple crown.
Hey, yes, me, I'm answering.
You're so funny.
Yeah,
did you mind that the money was jacked up?
Did it matter?
I thought I might actually finally get in.
And then you found out.
And then I found out how much it was. I said, I got to pass.
I appreciate you asking.
Thanks.
Now.
Thanks, boss. I got to pass.
Exactly. I got no choice. What do you want me to do? Say no? Yeah, thank you, boss.
That's good stuff.
Too rich for my
life. They're going to have some fun with it. It's great. I love the Derby every year. I was married on Derby Day. Did you know that?
No.
Fugiasi, yes, Pegasus.
Fusaichi, yeah. Pegasus. I was, yeah, at that Derby. Yeah. So while you were getting married, I was in, yeah, Louisville.
I don't think we...
I was there.
Yeah, I think we knew each other, but I don't think you were invited to my wedding.
Was not.
Yeah, I feel bad about that now. Who knew?
Wow.
Who knew that we would wind up, you know, being this kind of...
In
this,
we've almost been together as long as we've both been married.
Talking about a match made in heaven.
Exactly right.
Or somewhere.
No,
my work wife.
A match made
in
Northbrook.
Oh, my gosh, that's coming back.
We started at Sporting News Radio.
Oh, jeez.
And then one.
Can we put this to music, Brandon?
Were you ever on 1&1 Sports?
Can we put this to music?
When I first got...
Yeah, I was there. I was actually there before you, yeah.
You were there before me.
I was lucky enough to meet Tom... Oh, gosh. It's not, I was going to say Silverstein, but that, it might be, his name was Tom Silverstein also. They moved from Vegas.
He's a Packers writer.
Right. Yeah. No, that's Silverstein. Yeah. That's Silverstein. That was Tom Silverstein. He came from Vegas and they came here. He was out at Hallis Hall. I was working with Luke Canales,
yeah,
over at WMAQ, yeah, the old 670 when it was WMAQ. Interning, and I went up there, and this guy's like, you got a resume? We're just BSing, waiting for Coach Wanstedt, believe it or not, was coaching the team then.
Yeah.
So this is back when you had, like, the nice paper resumes, the stock paper, and bring it up there.
I was there.
2 days later, you were there, too. 2 days later, had an interview and started working on weekends with Jay Mariotti.
Yeah, so you did the Jay Mariotti show?
I did the Jay Mariotti show. That was my first gig, was screening calls and cutting tape with a razor blade for Jay Mariotti.
Hmm. That's hilarious. Cutting
1996.
tape. 1996. Wow.
Look at you now.
Now look at him.
I'll answer phones for you.
No, you're like you're a big time radio professional. What are you talking about? You're the executive producer. You don't just answer phones, you order us around. It's shocking.
I chase Eddie O around for a month to make sure he joins us at 9 o'clock on the Friday of Derby Day.
Eddie wanted to come on. It was going to be hard to chase. Yeah. Sorry, I hate to kill that narrative, but
the key was
Eddie called me to find out what time we were going to go on.
The key was
ready.
Friday. The key was Friday, David. Right, we want Friday. The latest information. We're off the air at 10.
Yes.
We want the last minute info.
That's good.
And there were 4 NHL games last night. There was a lot of info, and we need Eddie's take on it. We got to get a Derby winner and a Blackhawks coach.
How about an Oaks winner?
Oh, gosh.
You know, the Oaks.
I'll be right back. I'm going to get some breakfast.
I think the Oaks is very competitive.
I'm of no use here.
Take a look at the Oaks. Have you seen that field? I'm just saying, I don't know that there is a favorite.
We want to pick the right lady.
Yeah. You kind of get it right.
The Phillies.
That's so much fun. It should be great. Can't wait. Most exciting 3 minutes in sports?
2 minutes.
2 minutes in sports. Excuse me. I've been to the Derby, and it feels like it takes longer just to recover. It was one of the greatest parties known to man. Anyway, do you dress up on Derby Day, Mr. David? You look like that shirt might work.
No. I don't dress up on Derby Day. This shirt is, you're fascinated by this shirt.
I love it.
I remind you, it's out of the Flag
I'd
and Anthem box.
I love it. You look like you're quite
taken by this floral print, which is a Flag and Anthem doozy. It's a beauty.
Yeah.
And
Brandon I would be happy to wear a shirt like that.
Exactly.
I have a shirt like that, actually.
Do you?
I think.
That's great.
I think I have some similar Flag and Anthem like that.
Flag and Anthem, they deliver. I think you guys are both large. Maybe they'll put a couple floral prints in a box and send them to you.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the weather is going to improve next week, right?
So next week. It was supposed to this weekend, but that changed. It was supposed to be like almost
raining.
70 on Sunday, now drippy all Sunday. Not good.
Dare I ask if we're going to need to search for a mutter?
I think we're going to.
Oh, God.
We'll get into it. David's fired up. We're all excited.
I'll be back at 9:30.
What are you?
You're
going to
skip the Eddie O segment at
9:30? No, I love Eddie O.
I
know. I don't have a whole lot to add when you're talking about going after a mutter and talking about who's going to win the Oaks. I'm checking out.
man, I mean, I think once a year you ought to get on the bandwagon.
This is
kind of like the Masters.
The idea that you're in the show pool and yet you have no interest seems shocking to me.
The minimal interest. I'm doing my research. I'm being a professional. Okay. I'm part of the game, part of the crew.
I will give David credit. David submitted one of the questions for pick six that we're using about the Derby.
There you go. He's working hard.
Team guy, man.
That's you.
Trying.
That's you all over. All right, we got a ton to get to. We got the pick six, all the big stories of the day, of the weekend. We're going to break it all down. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
My work wife.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What did you make of the Cubs' solo home run attack against Paul Skeens? Was Colin Ray the better pitcher on the day, and how do you explain that?
Oh, he was good. He was the better pitcher on the day. It seemed like there's no way around it. You know, you had a guy in Skeens who's a great pitcher, but he was kind of battling himself a little bit. He was struggling a little bit, and then they got him with the homers. That was wonderful to see. And the back-to-back jacks and his reaction to that, I thought, was just interesting. Just, you know, the guy the guy is obviously a you know, great pitcher, but when any pitcher struggles with control, you're going to have a bad outing. And I thought that his outing wasn't really that bad. He was in the game. But good for the Cubs. That was very exciting to see the three solo homers. I as far as Colin Ray's concerned, I think he's been very good since we've seen him. I don't think he's really had any bad outings, right? And I think that he was real professional. He was real good. He went in. He went longer in the game. He went through six. I mean, the guy, I how do you not feel good about the guy putting on a performance like that? They got a good one. They're getting really good pitching from places you might not have anticipated. And that's a real relief given what happened with Justin Steele.
Well, if we're calling Wednesday night's game, and I don't disagree, a loss on the front office, then I have to give a little bit of a tip of a cap on yesterday's win as a front office win. So you gotta, you know, when you're going to point fingers or be critical, which is totally fine, that's what we do. I also do want to be nice about it and tip the cap because Colin Ray has been way better. I did not expect that. And this also goes to a guy I've picked on is the skipper, because that is his guy from Milwaukee, right? They were together in Milwaukee, so I'm sure he had a big voice in getting him here. But that's not the question. So I will admit, going into the fifth inning, I was a little bit nervous and almost texted David and saying, well, Skeens is taking care of the Cubs. He doesn't have the strikeout numbers. But and then something about the Cubs half of the fifth, we play as many or more Zach Zaidman highlights on the pregame show.
Love Zach.
I love Zach too, but I
great
mean
job.
The point is that the Cubs seem to score in the fifth. If you're looking, you know, we're talking a little gambling in the first segment. Take a little pizza beer money on live betting that the Cubs will score in the bottom of the fifth inning or the top of the fifth inning. In the fifth inning in general, it's been very lucrative so far. Maybe Paul Skeens doesn't like to pitch during the day. He had his lowest velocity of the season. He had his fewest strikeouts of the season. He obviously gave up the most home runs. He also walked more guys yesterday than he has all season long. And I know we're only 5 weeks into the season, but still, walked more guys in one game than he had in four previous starts.
He had a bad day. He had an off start. But it had something to do as well with playing and pitching against the best offense in baseball right now. The Cubs grind out at bats. They are patient and selective. Say a Suzuki homered on a 3-0 pitch. You can't relax against this lineup. You can't relax against any hitter in it. Well, maybe there's whoever's playing third. But I do think that this is top to bottom a longer, stronger batting order because Kyle Tucker and Seiya Suzuki are carrying a lot of the weight in the middle of the order and making everyone around them better. That's a great thing to see. So they handled Paul Skeens, one of the best right-handers in baseball, and that's great to see. And yes.
Not of the cap to Shota. Shota showed him a couple pitches.
Maybe.
He didn't throw the fastball as much.
Possibly.
He's trying to do stuff because Shota got in his head.
As for Colin Ray.
Finished. The guy's
you're
finished.
Exactly right. That's a Jed victory. Colin Ray, very quietly, he's 34 years old, and he is, through the first month of the season, been the Cubs' MVP most valuable pitcher. He has four starts, and he's won all of them. He's got a save. He's got a 146 ERA. This guy has been a ray of light in that rotation.
Oh man.
Yeah, that's a good question.
How much pressure is on Cubs starter Ben Brown tonight, and is it more because of Craig Counsell's words or Cade Horton's rise?
I think Craig Counsell put the heat on Ben Brown when he said he wasn't good enough, to be frank, and he was a guy that needs a third pitch, which will come. Both things are true. Both things are on display, front and center. Big series in Milwaukee. Why is it big? Because it's in Milwaukee. Because it's the Brewers. Because you want to make a statement this year is different. That this season is going to go differently. And you are going to be a team that isn't going to fade. That is going to do everything right and isn't going away. That can start with Ben Brown going five innings, commanding all of his pitches, both of them. And he can go to the mound and then back to the dugout and look Craig Counsell in the eye and say, I got you. And frankly, that's the second part of the question. He's got to do that, because if he doesn't, by the way, we'll talk to Tommy Burch. Looking forward to that conversation, because down in Iowa, Cade Horton's putting up some impressive numbers, and I think he's going to be here sooner rather than later. Cade Horton as a who? Here's okay, you can't give me any crap about Ray Light when you Horton chime in. Here's with who? Who?
I love that.
So not only did Craig Counsell say it, Tommy Hotovy yesterday doubled down on it and also told us that Ben Brown embraces it. So Ben Brown won't have sleeves on tonight, temperature controlled up in Milwaukee. Maybe I'll have the roof open. I don't know if it's supposed to be drippy tonight. I know tomorrow, so whatever. Anyway, yes, this is a big start for Ben Brown. He needs to step up a little bit. Last outing, not good enough. And now you're playing the teams in your division. It's very important to set a tone tonight against the team that you're looking to dethrone.
I think that the pressure is on him because of Craig Counsell. I think that Craig Counsell has interceded here, and he said to him, hey, get it together. It puts a spotlight on the guy. We talked to Tommy Hotovy about it, and Tommy said that, yeah, he's saying to him that you're good enough to do it. We know he's good enough to do it. So get it done. It's as simple as that. And I love the way that they're handling it and the way that they're being as frank and forthright and just telling the kid, hey, you know, we are in the midst of something here. You can be a part of it, but the line is moving, and you've got to be on it, and you got to be doing it, or you're going to be left behind. Because that's exactly what will happen, whether it's Cade Horton or anyone else, or they go outside the organization. You want to be a part of this thing? Let's see it. Let's go. It's time. So I love that kind of thing. I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think it does put pressure on the kid, but in a good way. You know, just get on board, man. Let's get along. Let's have the big win. Let's go. Nothing wrong with that. I thought there was a reason he did it, you know, and did it publicly. They usually try to keep that stuff on the down low, but I got no issue at all with him being as frank and forthright as he was. I thought it was, you know, it's motivating. It's good. Let's go. Let's see it.
Wow, that's a great question.
Is the White Sox status as the fifth highest scoring offense in baseball in the first inning one of the flukiest stats you've ever heard? How do you explain them trailing only the Mets, the Phillies, the Yankees, and the Red Sox in that area? Any surprise they were leading 1-0 after the first yesterday?
That is just the most bizarre thing I've ever heard. They've won 8 games. They have like the lowest output in baseball, right? They can't score runs. How many games did we say? They've had 20 games where they can't score more than 3 runs, something like that. And yet they can score in the first inning. They're the fifth best team in the major leagues. They can steal a run in the first inning. That is bizarre. It's just hard to believe that they're mentioned with those other teams, even in some weird, you know, the fifth in a group thing. That is utterly non-sustainable. I don't know why it's happening, but they clearly can't score. But they're in these games where they get 2 runs in the first inning, and then they just, you just wait for them to be overtaken and they lose. It's just seriously a weird statistic. I don't think there's any, I just think it's just this kind of strange, weird thing that happened. I don't think it tells you anything, and I don't think it means they're going to ever be better than they are.
Very interesting. I'll see that stat, and I will raise you one. The White Sox have won by 7-plus runs 5 times this year. 5 times. They've won by 7-plus runs, tying them with the most in Major League Baseball with the Cubs. Now, talking about the Cubs' ability to score in the fifth might be interesting. Just follow along for a little bit or get on board tonight if you want, if you got the itch.
Yep.
So you bet White Sox score in the first, Cubs score in the fifth. Put that together and see what happens.
Too busy picking Derby winners. I think that the White Sox run differential through 5 innings would lead you to believe that this is actually a team in contention and not at the basement. And that's a strange statistic. I think Ozzie kidded that if games were three innings, the White Sox would be in first place. And it seems like that's also indicative of the, you know, if you want to do big picture, look at what this says, is that this team is more watchable. This team is starting strong and focused, and they're doing things that reflect a manager's input and influence. And you see a team that's trying to max out in terms of their talent and their potential. And they kind of are, because then, for whatever reason, they're not good enough yet to win these games over nine innings. But they're good enough to keep focused and to do the right things for a first couple at bats or the first couple spins through. And then baseball catches up to them, essentially. So I think this is a telling stat because it shows little signs of progress that are obvious and evident this year, more so than they were a year ago, and which is why the Sox, despite their record, They're not watching them and feeling like your baseball sensibilities are being offended this year, like last year. So this is another statistic that supports that idea.
And speaking of weird statistics, did you see that Miguel Vargas is now in an 8-game hitting streak?
And he's really hot during that 8-game streak.
They've made an adjustment with his hands.
Is that what the explanation is? Whatever they're doing, this is, to your point, last nine games, 13 hits, .394 average, .459 on base. His OPS is 1.004, and he's only struck out four times in 37 appearances. That's progress.
That's another really good question.
Luis Robert Jr. drove in four runs for the Sox in the win. So is this the start of a May resurgence? How confident are you that Chris Getz will make the right call on Luis Robert?
You know, I was at the White Sox gala last night, the Beyond the Diamond festivities at the Old Post Office, White Sox Charities, great event, great organization, and talked to a lot of people. And Luis Robert obviously was a subject of a lot of the conversations. And it fascinates me how people who have been around baseball for such a long time and know the sport better than I do still look at Luis Robert Jr. and sometimes chalk up some of his slow start to nothing more complicated than weather. Then he just has to heat up. And he's a slow starter.
Yeah.
And he needs things to get more conducive to what he's used to and what he's comfortable with. And he is an enormous talent. Don't have to remind anybody of that. He's walking more, which suggests he's being more selective. The way that he can take advantage of teams maybe pitching around him, the way they will in this lineup, is stealing as often as he's been stealing. That explains his aggressiveness. A walk becomes a double. You don't want to do that. He's going to get more pitches to hit. It's going to get warmer. He's going to get hotter. And so all those things conspire to making you expect him to start taking off now. It's time to go, Luis Robert Jr. It's time to remind people how good you were in 2023, not how bad you became a year later. So if this is the beginning of that ascent, more power to him, and more power should be coming, because he's going to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And when he does, as that goes, unfortunately for people who like and appreciate that, he's probably going to go. Because I think that this has got to be consistent with the game plan. And the game plan is, you are rebuilding. You need assets. You need talent in your system. And a guy like that could help you get more.
Very well said, David. And I would just say, now what you'd like to see is him put together like a big weekend. The Astros are in town. Put together like a weekend where you help your team at least avoid being swept. Question for you, David. And this is regarding Luis Robert Jr.'s future. Either one of the Ishbia brothers at the event last night?
Did not see them.
Did you see Jerry last night?
Did not see him. Okay. I don't know for sure. I did not stay, I should say. I did not stay for the majority of it after we were off the air at 7. I stayed around for a little bit longer, but I did not see Jerry or the Ishbias.
You were well-dressed. You had a nice black suit on.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering, does Gabe own his own tuxedo? Because, like, that used to be a thing. That men would own a tuxedo.
Gabe looked like a million, didn't he?
He looked great for himself.
He did. Gabe's doing terrific.
But he's got his own tuxedo.
I think that was his.
That was his.
I believe that was his. Yeah.
What the hell happened to men? Why don't we all go to the opera?
Cam Smith shouldn't looked good, too. Those guys.
Shouldn't we have events we have to go to where we own tuxedos?
Or just go to the opera?
You want to up the ante a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Well, how about on May the 16th? We've got an event. How about we make that a Mully and Haw black tie event on your talent?
Let me ask some. Can we get a tuxedo deal with someone? Because I'm not going to rent clothes.
I'm sure Mitch is listening.
Okay. I am not going to be popping popcorn in a tux. You get bacon grease on that thing. You know how much that's going to cost to get dry cleaned?
Well, there are aprons. There are these things called aprons now.
I know. You want me to put on a tux and an apron?
It'll suck right through the apron.
Can you imagine that picture?
Yeah, Dustin, you don't ruin a tuxedo with bacon grease. That is well said. See, that's what I'm saying. If we were real adults, we'd have these events we have to go to. Oh, I've got a party, a cocktail party where we'd be wearing tuxedos, and we could go with Gabe to some of the stuff.
When's the last time either of you wore a tuxedo?
Oh boy, it's been a long time. Yeah,
I haven't been to a black tie affair in a while.
Well, last night, that's what I wondered initially when we were doing the remote there. That was I expected to get in a tux and. I said, no, a black suit would be fine. Then Gabe shows up in a tux.
Yeah, he looked great. But that was super cool. I don't even know what the question was.
Louis Robert Jr.
Yeah.
Sorry, we answered
He needs
it.
A tux. He looked like $1 million.
He
that
did.
Guy. He didn't need gym shoes on, but I guess that was allowed. But he was, it wasn't so much that he was the best dressed guy on the
black carpet.
It's just that he looks like, he's so tall, long, elegant look. He looked like a million.
Look at a magazine cover.
And who did they pick? They picked someone else they thought looked really good. I can't think.
Chase Meidroff.
Chase Meidroff looked good?
I guess.
That's hard to believe.
That's what all the kids were saying.
Who brought him to for his
well,
grand
he's back, right? He's back. Workman's
he's back.
Out.
Yeah.
Workman's out. Was Workman at the event last night?
He was on the IL.
Brooks Baldwin was there. He looked like he was about 15 years old. He could have been at prom. I looked at him. I was like, oh, my God, he's so young.
They asked for his ID. He said, I don't have a license yet.
Did he drop the appetizer?
Workman?
Yeah. Wow, you are mean, man.
You go to the other side and you say you want to beat the Cubs.
They're going to trade Luis Robert Jr., so let's hope he has a big month.
First of all, I just stepped on your question.
That was the voice of Casey Johnson, and how sobering was Casey Johnson with you guys Thursday about the possibility of a big Bulls trade?
It's a long shot. I mean, a lot of things need to happen. I mean, first of all, let's analyze the relationship between Giannis and that franchise. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to hear the package you guys came up with for the Bulls, because I'm struggling to find a suitable one.
Three first, Kobe White and Vooch. Would that get it done?
Yeah.
No.
So are we all in acceptance mode now?
I love KC, and I love the way he told us exactly, almost verbatim, what we were going to hear on the final news conference. So when it was as unsatisfactory as it was, we kind of knew it was coming. I think that he's got a very sober look at all the kind of weird fantasy basketball stuff we talk about. And the idea that Vooch, for instance, where's Vooch going? What can they get for Vooch? Not much and nowhere special. It's just hard to imagine that he's the missing piece from the Lakers.
Lakers.
I can't see it. KC shot us down.
Killing cheerfulness. That's what the KC stands for.
I like it.
Needed to bring that back after yesterday as well. I guess we're in acceptance mode. Do you guys remember? I already forgot. Remember we were talking about Bulls t-shirts after AK?
Yeah.
What was it? Stretch the... What was the wording? He had a term that he used three times.
Stretch the window? No.
Something about extend
the timeline.
Window. Yeah.
Stretch the timeline.
Yeah.
Well, this is stretching the timeline. That's what this is. We are stretching the timeline.
Casey does a terrific job of keeping things in perspective.
Yep.
And nobody understands maybe the limitations or the limited scope of the Bulls' imagination better than he does. That's being somewhat diplomatic. If you had a director of basketball operations, executive vice president, whatever the title may be, who was more of a wheeler and a dealer, then you might anticipate a different offseason than the one we're about to experience. Be patient, Bulls fans. Or let me rephrase that. Stay patient, Bulls fans. KC was right. I think we'll talk about and chronicle the Giannis sweepstakes, the Zion speculation, all of the things about NBA superstars that are going elsewhere. A, B, C. Anywhere but Chicago. And I think those are the ABCs of this Bulls offseason. They're not getting a superstar. I wanted to believe it. I can get on board with Alexi Giannoulias, who wants to kind of lead this public campaign. And I could play along, and I want that to happen. But I think yesterday brought me back to earth. Thank you, KC, for reminding me of just how limited the Bulls' ambitions really are.
Shrink the timeline.
Oh, that's a good question.
Shrink the timeline. It sounds like extending the timeline shrink the timeline was the t-shirt. Yes,
it's a t-shirt.
All right, what is your Kentucky Derby prediction, and do you trust Mitch to bet the right horse or the office pool?
Why wouldn't we trust Mitch? Who's suggesting what? Of course he's in line.
Who asked
now
that question?
Who asked that question? Nobody would wonder if you could trust Mitch. Mitch delivers a winner each and every
he does derby,
and he's in line right now betting our hard-earned money.
Maybe in Oakbrook.
Might be.
Oakbrook OTB.
Might be. All right, so I know which way Mully might be going. I love the idea of journalism making a run. You know that I love a revived journalism, rejuvenated journalism. I just love journalism. I do. Still do. But, I can't pick journalism. I can't pick the favorite. I can't be the novice horse racing aficionado and go with the easiest pick on the board. So I'm going to go. I did some research. I did try to prepare.
Here it comes.
I wanted to be a little bit... I didn't want to be out. Like, didn't know what you guys were talking about. I think the winner will be 17-1 odds.
Ooh, wow.
Coming in out of gate one.
Oh.
A lot of fans
you're going for,
in this town.
You're going for Bob Baffert.
You could call them, if they are fans of the black and red at the United Center, Citizen Bull.
Yeah.
Citizen Bull.
It's a Baffert horse. The one that dropped out was a Baffert horse.
Right.
So the entry's down to one horse. That's interesting.
Baffert returning, having this kind of history, and you don't want to bet against him necessarily, but that was a big reason. I am going with Citizen Bull.
And I believe that's a speed horse at the one hole. You don't want a one hole, but
right. And that horse, we've had that in the past, not many times, but we've had a Bob Baffert speed horse from the one post has gone wire to wire.
I like
and
it.
That very well could happen. If you look, I have my one sheet of integrity in my hand.
Uh-oh.
I have three horses highlighted.
Oh, that's one of them.
I have three horses highlighted.
I feel vindicated.
I have the one.
I feel
seen. I have the seven. And I have the 17. So because of the story, I like a story not quite as much as David does, but almost as much as David does. I'm doing a 1-7-17 e-box, and I am calling for Citizen Bull. I am rooting on Citizen Bull.
Good for you.
Wow, you picked the same horse?
1-7-17, $1 e-box.
Crazy.
Three horse.
Yeah, I mean, here's the problem. The best storyline in the race, there is a horse in the race called Cole Battle, which could never win, which is a terrible horse, which doesn't have any element to it that would make you think it could win. But the owner of the horse is the trainer. He's like 70-something years old. He's been operating in Louisiana. This horse started out winning, like it won at Delta Downs. And this guy, a small stakes race at Delta Downs, kept moving forward, won at Oak Lawn. This horse wound up in the Kentucky Derby, and this is like the highlight of this guy's life, who's been in racing forever, but in the backwaters of racing. So if something like that could somehow happen, it would be magnificent. The problem is, it's how talented is the horse, not how much heart a horse has, although I once followed a horse called Black Tie Affair, and when we said the word, I thought of that beautiful gray horse. that started out. I saw it run at Arlington and bet on it in a race where the Mutter ended up, he battled him and he won by a nose, got on the horse. That horse, Black Tie Affair, ended up as the horse of the year.
Hmm.
And I got to bet it at every race as it went on, and it was just like one of the most glorious racing seasons, probably the greatest racing season of my life, being on Black Tie Affair all those many races as it became the horse of the year. Incredible. I'm going with journalism. I like journalism, and the horse is going to win. It could be a super horse. We'll find out. If there is one horse in the field that could win a Triple Crown, it's hard not to get on him.
Well,
it's hard to, you know, he's
I hope you're
three
right.
to one, and
I hope you're right.
He may never be at that price again.
I hope that you are correct, because there was nothing I would enjoy more than coming in here Monday morning,
yep,
celebrating journalism.
And I think I got a my the Mulligan long shot is Tiztastic at 20-1.
Hmm. Wonder what the origin of that name is.
Yeah.
Well, Tiztastic.
It's not fantastic. Tiztastic. Tis a beautiful day.
Tis a mystery.
Tis a mystery. All right, we've got so much to get to. We got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Have you wrapped your mind about Ozzie Trapillo as the Bears' starting left tackle? Do you believe he's up for the job, or will Braxton Jones be the man? How would you rate Kieran Amagaji's chances, and can you handicap the competition, please?
Well, I think when you look at this, the revelation, if you want to call it that, from Ryan Poles to the Bears radio network about Ozzie Trapillo starting out at left tackle was a bit of a surprise. He could qualify as a development in that position battle. I also think it's evidence that they'll see what they have. They'll test what they want him to be long-term, get a good look, and wait for Braxton Jones to get healthy. The Bears' best offensive line going into the 2025 season, it's not going to start until the first week of September. Let's remember that. So if Braxton Jones is back in time for training camp and he is healthy, there is no reason to believe that he can't still be as serviceable as he was before the injury. Unless there's a setback. And now that's a big unless, but unless there's a setback, there's no reason to believe why he can't be the fifth starter on that offensive line that is vastly improved. That's plan A for me. That's plan A. Plan B is he has a setback. He's not as powerful as he was before the injury. He wasn't able to condition or add strength or whatever the case may be. And then you might have to try Ozzie Trapillo as a rookie forced into the lineup before he's ready to take on that challenge. He's a second-round draft pick, so he shouldn't be overwhelmed. But I think he's plan B. Plan C means everything has gone terribly wrong, and Kieran Amagaji is forced back into the lineup. I don't have a lot of faith in somebody who I saw look as overwhelmed as he did as a rookie. I know that's not a fair evaluation because of all the things that he didn't have in terms of development and time on the field, but we did see him get overwhelmed. That's a hard image to erase from your memory. I also think this, had he shown them something or shown them enough, they wouldn't have been in the market for an offensive tackle in the second round. This was a redraft of Ozzie Trapillo, and I think that's the thing you got to remember.
Great point.
Those are really good scenarios that you put out there, David. Just continuing to have a little bit of fun at the expense of the four-letter network. They still have Ozzie Trapillo as the starting right tackle with Darnell Wright backing him up. So careful where you go to for your information. I see Ozzie Trapillo as your swing tackle. I think it makes a ton of sense that he'll get the first reps at left tackle while they're waiting out the Braxton Jones Achilles ankle, whatever lower leg body injury he was dealing with. He is out of the boot now. But as far as Kieran Amagaji, I think he's going to end up being your swing guard. I think he will end up being the guy that is going to back up the two. It's just my opinion. I think he ends up backing up the two guards, and that Ozzie Trapillo is your swing. You can't have two swing tackles, can you? Can you have two swing tackles? Not active anyway, right? I mean, these guys aren't going to play special teams. Hopefully the Bears learn from last year you shouldn't put the backups in to try to block on extra points and field goals. We saw how that blew up in their face last year.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think that this is going to be interesting. I think it's just interesting. They obviously don't – they shut their mouths off. Talked about the right tackle moving. That's not going to happen.
It's all right. Yeah, so the right tackle's not moving.
I'm getting choked up.
Yeah. Darnell Wright staying around the right side.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that really is the news of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, the news to all – yeah, well, his moving –
that's why Ozzie's move.
We did wonder because of his versatility if Ozzie would be starting on the right side.
Yes, and I don't think that's the case.
Right. I think Darnell Wright is going to stay there. You keep a strength of strength. The danger in moving somebody after 2 years in the league is you're weakening two positions, and they don't want to do that.
And I don't want to be cruel about it, but I do think that, unfortunately, Braxton Jones has been ordinary as a starter. It doesn't mean he can't get better. I think what the head coach said about creating more anchor and being able to handle – some of the rushes that he's faced, that is still real. And they've got to figure out a way to get that done. It's just not going to be very easy to do it when the guy is coming off of surgery.
No, you're right. So but the one thing we don't know is, and maybe this is wishful thinking, but you're doing a lot of wish casting in the offseason.
Yes, you are.
The impact of Joe Tooney next to Braxton Jones, helping him become better because of the confidence he has in the person next to him. Also, the amount of times where, whether it's communication, whether it's helping, whether it's a double team, whatever the case is, when you're lining up next to somebody, that chemistry can make a weaker blocker better and a lesser guy stronger.
You know, I don't know enough about Durham Smythe. But is he the tight end? Is he the blocking tight end? Is he the third tight end? Or could someone like Cole Kmet help out? The problem with a problem at left tackle is you're going to need support. And when you do that, that takes away from some of the magic you want to do with your offense. So you need to have a left tackle you can trust. And you're right. They should be solid enough in the line that if they have to support someone, they can do that. But it just you just hope that it doesn't end up being like a boogeyman position.
I think Cole Kmet is a trusted blocker, and he is somebody that may not relish being used in pass protection, but might be utilized more in that role than he has in the past.
But I think starting Trapillo there is kind of interesting because you know you're just looking for something, and if he can be professional and hold on at that position, that doesn't mean he's going to be a great left tackle, but it means he can be professional and hold on. And I think your statement that it is a redraft, they took a guy in the third round last year they claimed would have been there in the first if he wasn't hurt.
I don't want to pick on the young man because he was injured and he had limitations of what he could achieve on the field before they thrust him on the field. But ideally, if you draft a third rounder in 2024, that's a developmental season. He would be in a position to challenge this year the position that Ozzie Trapillo is in right now.
That's exactly correct. Okay. We've got your calls next. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Paul Skeens, eh.
He's no Colin Ray.
This guy has been a ray of light in that rotation.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 in the score.
Can't deny it. He has been.
No, you're right.
He has been a bargain, too. Dustin's exactly right when we blame the front office for a loss the other night because John Birdie couldn't handle a ground ball, and there again was a third base issue leading to a Cubs loss. When Colin Ray, bargain that he is, pitches like he does yesterday.
That's also front office.
Yes. Yeah. Credit where it's due. Colin Ray has not lost a start. Or the Cubs have not lost a game that he started. He's got four victories in those four starts, and he's got a save as well. So he is a 34-year-old yes, who is definitely enjoying a strong start to this season.
And I mean, here's the thing. Like, he's a good pitcher. I don't want to make it sound like it's a fluke that he's doing well. He's a good pitcher, and he's doing very well. It's just there are some years where you almost have this kind of talisman he's a lucky charm, and you win when the guy starts or some kind of, you know what I mean, mm-hmm, by that?
Yeah.
Like, the guys just get on a roll and they end up being better than you thought they were, and they help you out because you weren't expecting that contribution.
And he's a Craig Council guy.
Yes.
He's a Craig Council guy. They had some success together with the Brewers. I did not know until doing more of a look into Colin Ray's background.
Yeah.
He went to Indiana State. He's a Sycamore.
You're kidding me.
He's a Sycamore. Wow. Down in Terre Haute.
He's an Indiana boy.
Has he met Larry Bird? He must have.
No, not everybody that goes to Indiana State for a couple of years meets Larry Bird.
Any professional athlete that went to Indiana State will have met Larry
Possibly.
Bird.
Possibly. I think that's right.
I think that is fair to say.
That's a good question for Colin Wright if he ever ends up on the show or inside the clubhouse.
I would love. Oh, thank you. You're going to go on Inside the Club. You know that you won't end up on this show, so you may as well talk to him with Bruce.
It's early.
It's early on Inside the Clubhouse.
It's 9 o'clock. There's a big difference
We're on till 10.
9 to 11.
We could
50 weeks of the year.
We could get him on it.
We talk baseball. That's what Bruce likes to say. Inside the Clubhouse. Every Saturday morning, about 50 weeks of the year. Because he knows
he's
2 weeks.
He's on the score with me and David Haught.
That's tomorrow, by the way. Got to find out later who we got. Bruce is booking the show.
Is he coming on?
Bruce is going to be on the show, yes.
No, is Colin Ray coming
on? I don't know. Maybe.
Because ask him. I mean, just.
That's a good suggestion.
It'd be a fun little chat. Like, hey, I saw you went to Indiana State. I got to ask you. Favorite Bird memory? Have you ever met Larry Bird?
That's a note to myself. Yes.
If we get
Colin Ray on, we need to ask him about any kind of Larry Bird encounter.
Larry Bird, man. I mean, the greatest stuff out there is when old players are talking about Larry Bird, because he was such a good player, and he was a lot better than people think he was, even though everyone knew he was a superstar. I'm just saying, he also was one of these guys who talked so much trash that everybody's kind of got a story about him walking in and saying this or saying that. It's awesome.
Yeah, Larry Bird, legend. I love that kind of Larry stuff. Legend.
I was really, I shouldn't say this, but I was hoping for more from the 2005 players that you guys talked to yesterday. Not that they weren't great to have, you know, a John Garland.
Aaron Rowan. They were guests on the Chicago Lead at the White Sox Charities Gala last night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I talked to him off the air about the Bears draft. He likes the Bears draft. I wanted to get into that a little bit more. On the air, but we ran out of time. But Aaron Rowan, big Bears fan, still follows him. Had a really good working knowledge of what the Bears had drafted.
We need to talk to those guys, like when we're getting close to the reunion and all that stuff, because there are very funny stories out there about different guys doing different things. You know, the Burley story of him, having a couple pops.
This is a great weekend to do that too.
Yes,
because the Astros are in town.
There you go.
The Astros are in town playing the White Sox 20 years later. Yeah, great John stuff. Garland looks like he's teaching literature at an Ivy League school. Very distinguished gentleman looking. Yeah. So I did ask him the question. We were talking about the White Sox rotation 2005 yesterday morning about how they had four starters make at least 30 starts.
It's incredible.
And that durability is something you just don't see.
They when the Sox won the World Series, they had all their starting pitchers going full length games. It was incredible.
It was
one after the other, just great stuff.
And who was the fifth man of that rotation? Because we know Burley, we know Garcia, Contreras, and John Garland. Yeah. Those four made I think at least 32 starts apiece that season.
El Duque?
Yes.
Yeah.
He made, I think, 22 starts, and then the other 10 came from Brandon McCarthy.
Brandon McCarthy.
His name came up last night, too, at the Sox Gala.
Wow.
That's a blast from the past.
That is a blast from the past.
Yeah. So
El Duque, he's the guy that struck out the Boston Red Sox. He came into the game with the bases loaded, and he struck out, and he
great escape act.
One of the you know great moments
in that season.
And I remember him. Coop told us a story that he basically told them. He told Coop was like, you know, El Duque, what did you do? Like, well, that's so. And he said that they were all trying to be a hero, and he only threw them garbage. He said it in a more colorful fashion, but the idea was he never really threw a strike, and they all struck out because they were all going to try to hit
chasing.
The ball. They were all going to be the, you know, the World Series hero kind of guy, you know, in the playoffs. They were all going to, and he just struck out the side with nothing.
They were having a good time last night talking about 2005. I've also enjoyed talking to Will Venable.
Yeah, Will Venable,
He's a bright young manager.
Yep.
And he's a real affable guy.
He is. He's a good man.
Good sport.
And he's doing okay. It's just the poor White Sox. 312-644-6767. Be right back on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now. And what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. That it's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.